Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You wouldn't be leading the pressing line with Zerski as your Mel Gibson, like, as your Braveheart, you know? And Spurs rattled past them.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Good evening, Ireland. It's Who You Got with William Hill, the show where we predict the future in a footballing sense, the immediate future this weekend. I'm joined by my trusted crew, my favourite two. It's Shane Hannan from Monaghan and it's Kathleen McNamee from Sligo.
You look very confused there as you said Sligo.
Sligo.
I was doing that as a purposeful Ron Burgundy read.
Sligo?
Yeah. Shall we see how we got on last week? Shall we get straight into it? Like, stop messing around.
Yeah.
Come on, let's, we're here for business.
I think we definitely should.
Let's see the. Oh, yeah. Did you have a good week?
I did.
Okay. Kathleen had a good week. Yeah.
5 points.
All right. Let's brandish the table or the results from last week, shall we see first, if you don't mind there. So. It's Kathleen who had a tremendous week. Is that 5 points I see before me, Kathleen, for the radio listeners?
Yeah.
Break it down.
I got the Everton game right, Everton United, 2-2.
Oh, yeah.
So that was my exact score. And then.
That's impressive. After 72 minutes, it wasn't looking good.
I know. I was watching it with my dad because we were also watching the rugby at the same time, and he is an Everton fan. And normally I would be very supportive of Everton, but on this occasion, I wasn't that upset to see United come back. This is what we always say about who you got. It's annoying because you put in a certain result, maybe a team that you don't particularly support, and then they get the result and you get excited about it.
That's Bruno Fernandes, what looked like a consolation to half the deficit, was United's first shot on target. So it was. That's why we're here, to predict the future, Kathleen, because you saw it coming when no one else did. What were your other 2 points? You got 5 in total.
I just got the other games right, apart from Arsenal, West Ham. No one got that one.
So we all got stung with Ireland Turkey.
Oh yeah,
because it was just 1-0. I don't think anyone went 1-0. And then we had Liverpool beating Man City 2-0 without them scoring, because our bet was City to score but Liverpool to win.
Yeah,
all right. Can we look at the rest of the table from last week there? I think I saw an interesting second name on that list. Wow. Cullum got 4 points. How did he do that? I don't know. I have to explain it to us someday. Just kind of has it in him.
Yeah, he does.
Owen also got 4 points. That's Owen Sheehan. And then propping up the table beneath is the football majesty and brain duo of Phil Egan and John Duggan, with the Maverick himself, Ger Gilroy. Next, Shane, middle of the road, 2 points last week.
Yeah,
discuss.
It was per week, I think. And it's in off the post job. I tried to explain my rationale for going for Manchester United last week. I went for 2-1 United. Wasn't to be. But look, this is the game. You're a goal away from a perfect exact point score.
To my point last week, we might look at the overall standings there in just a moment. But another game, of course, Kathleen, that threw us last week was West Ham beating Arsenal at the Emirates, their first home defeat of the season.
Yeah, that one was a tough one to take, especially because it came right after the scintillating rugby, which nearly didn't go our way as well. I mean, I still stand by what I said last week. Like, I don't think if Kai Havertz was on the pitch, it would have actually been all that different a result. I think Arsenal get to this stage of the season and, you know, Liverpool have had a couple of results that's opened the door a little bit to hope again about them potentially maybe slipping up, but Arsenal just don't seem to be able to take these opportunities and haven't taken these opportunities over the last couple of seasons whenever they arrive.
No, not at all. And look, we're not going to be talking about the Arsenal men's team this week, so I just want one word on this is about Raheem Sterling, which we actually haven't got to all week long and off the ball, is that Kathleen, you'd feel very bad about yourself if a defensive midfielder starting up front ahead of you.
Yeah. I mean, the Sterling signing was always a weird one.
I think he's a squad player, but now that they need him, he's not being used.
No, I don't. It's never felt, though, that Arteta had any like massive faith in him, even as a squad player. You know, like, his playing time has been so limited since he's come in. Even in games where things don't really matter, like early stage FA Cup, whatever it is, it doesn't. It kind of just feels like he's there to be there. And maybe some sort of influence on the team in terms of his experience and that side of things. But in terms of on the pitch, I just feel like it's a bit of a sad decline for someone who has had like a pretty good career.
Like, the fact that you look at his list of teams played for Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, it's been a relatively disappointing career for Raheem Sterling. The fact that it's got to this point, mercenary comes to mind, that he wants to play for all these top top sides. He's obviously on a lot of money, Raheem Sterling, but still a career that in recent years has flattered to deceive quite significantly, you would think. So yeah, it's disappointing from an Arsenal fan's perspective to get a player who you think is going to be a player who's going to take on players, beat them, create goals, score goals. He's just not turned into that player.
How about LinkedIn though? I mean, look at his the clubs he's represented.
Serious LinkedIn, yeah.
All right, we'll look at the overall standings for, we're getting to the business end of the table now, the end of February. So for the radio listeners' benefit out there, Wilhelm O'Callaghan is top of the league and still absolutely flying it. 68 points, that says there, Shane.
It does.
Help my eyes.
Yeah.
He's 7 points clear of his nearest challenger, who is the off-the-ball evening producer, Mick McCarthy. Bottom of the table, sort of irrelevant there. And then middle of the road, you have Kathleen McNamee, who's really come back strong here, Kathleen. You were kind of in with myself and Phil as two strugglers after last year's majesty when we were the top three. You're now in the Champions League positions in fourth place.
Yeah, I'm making a late run at the top of the table. Mm. I don't think I'm going to catch Will. I'm still 10 points behind Will, but Owen's only a point ahead of me in third, so I reckon
it's close.
That could be the spot.
All right, so can we get that screen up again? Who's bottom of the table? I didn't quite see.
Shane Hannan kind of no man's land. Like, no one's really talking
seven
about him. It's kind
of
irrelevant where he is. Like, where's the talking point in Shane Hannan? Shane, over to you.
I'll tell you where a talking point is on that table, though. So Jer Gilroy has the joint second most exact scores, correct? He's got 8 exact scores. And yet is second bottom in the table. So it just goes to show you, getting the exact scores doesn't always get you close to the top. You need to get the actual winners of the games. Just, you know, you just need to predict who's going to win these games. Keep it simple, keep the ball on the ground. And that's generally what I would do. That's my advice to you.
Sorry.
As someone who's 7 points clear of you at the rock bottom.
Are we predicting the correct scores?
Oh yes, you thought we were saying the score. We definitely did not.
To quote Gary Neville,
yeah.
I didn't know that now.
No.
All right, let's move on to the present. Stop living in the past, man. Look at the fixtures for this week. So we have 3 FA Cup fifth round games. You have Manchester United against Fulham, Newcastle United against Brighton and Hove Albion, and Manchester City versus Plymouth Argyle. And we also have a game from the WSL where Arsenal entertain West Ham United. We might start there with the graphic for Manchester City Plymouth, because this is our featured game with William Hill this week. So no surprise there, it's unanimously in favour of Manchester City. Various score lines. Let's just see who thinks Plymouth will score. Mick, Shane and Phil. Before I bring Sam Norris in from William Hill, just before I do that, explain to me why Plymouth Argyle will breach Manchester City's defence. You don't know, do you?
No, I think the manner in which they beat Liverpool in the last round would lead you to believe
that's ages ago.
I know it's ages ago, but still, like, this is what they have to play for. This is their, you know, they've a manager that's come in during this season. He seems like a very inspirational guy, but I don't know. I just think they'll be up for this game naturally because of course it's probably the dream tie they could have got.
That's true.
So look, I've gone for 3-1. I think a lot of people have gone for City to whitewash and score a lot of goals in this game, and maybe they will. Look, they've an off week in terms of midweek football and stuff, so they can really go hell for leather in this game, City. So I'd like to think there's a fairy tale goal, maybe a 1-0 lead for Plymouth in this game.
Ooh,
who knows?
Interesting. A distant relative of Chalk, it's Sam Norris in the house. Sam, how are you?
Afternoon, guys. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Feeling a bit like the perennial cup goalkeeper, like I've been peeled up for my token appearance. No matter how well I play today, Lee Phelps is going to be back for the Premier League game next week.
In fairness, Lee Phelps is one of the game's greats. You know, there's no shame there. Shame there, Sam. And like, cup goalkeepers are important. We have Quevian Kelleher there to show for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you could be a future star of the game. Can you justify William Hill's place in life after last week? You led us all astray. Now, I know you're speaking on behalf of your colleague here, but it was Manchester City to lose the game against Liverpool. Yes, but Manchester City to score. And it didn't happen.
No, it didn't. It was an extremely popular bet as well. Yeah. And really, the fashion in which Liverpool controlled the game was just fabulous to see, really. It never kind of looked like Manchester City were going to have a sniff of scoring in that game. Very impressive performance from Liverpool.
Absolutely. All right, we'll move on to the FA Cup this weekend. So our featured game with yourself is Manchester City against Plymouth Argyle. We're going for minus 3 goals at 6-4, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, which I think is a very fair bet. You know, Man City chalked up at 1-16. it is a game where people want to get City on side, and it's all about how you do that, whether you play on the handicaps, whether you're looking at City to win both halves. I quite concur with the view that Plymouth might score here. Manchester City to win and Plymouth to score is 8-5, so a tiny bit bigger than the 6-4 on the -3. And I think you're right, that Plymouth victory over Liverpool in the previous round wasn't just a flash in the pan. It was part of a wider improvement that we've seen from Plymouth since Milan Muzdic took over. They've only failed to score in one of their last seven. City conceded to Leighton Orient in the previous round, so that would give you hope as well. It was a bit of a worldie to do it, but I think 8-5 City in both teams to score is the way I'd play it. A similar kind of price, though, to the -3, which I think is probably an equally good way into the match. And I think bet builder-wise, yeah, I'd be looking at James McAtee as well. He's even money to score, got a hat-trick against Salford. He's 6-4 for over one shot on target. He's averaging two shots on target per game in the FA Cup, so I think he'll be popular. But yeah, I think Plymouth might get a goal here.
McAtee is the Sam Norris of cup football, for sure. He comes in and breaches those defences. As a matter of interest, actually, is a narrow Manchester City victory a good bet this weekend?
I personally think that sort of 3-1, 4-1 Manchester City would be kind of the way I would play it. But it is one of those markets where you're getting a bigger price on, say, for example, City to win 2-0 or 1-0 than you would do on 3-0, 4-0. Usually.
Yeah.
The bigger the wins you get, the bigger the price is going to be. So it is reflective of their kind of dominance in the market. Potentially values to be found there. 4-1 was my idea of a correct scoreline. That's 12-1, I think.
Okay. Anything else this weekend to look out for?
Well, yeah, we mentioned McAtee, who's obviously got a really good chance, I think, of starring in that game. Elsewhere, we've got Newcastle versus Brighton taking place, obviously, on Sunday. I feel like there's always one all Premier League tie every round that is a real drab affair. Maybe it'll be Bournemouth Wolves this weekend, but I've kind of got that game earmarked as a bit of a low scorer. Under 2.5 goals has cut in the last two Premier League meetings between Newcastle and Brighton. Anthony Taylor is reffing this match as well. Of Premier League referees who've reffed 10 or more games this season, he averages the fewest yellow cards dished out by anyone, just 3.1 a game. So I actually think the under goals, under cards double, which is 7-2 as a bet builder in Newcastle Brighton, might not be the most interesting game to watch, but I think that's got genuine legs in that game, which is maybe a little bit from left field. But I think the Manchester United-Fulham game might be a little bit more interesting. We've got a bet builder winnings boost on this game of 25%. And I've got to credit Lee for some of these stats. But Lee's original bet builder was Fulham to score over 1.5 goals, Rodrigo Muniz to have over one shot on target, Mazraoui and Sasa Lukic to make over two tackles. I've kind of enhanced it and I've lived the dream a bit. I've changed Muniz to score and Mazraoui and Lukic to be booked. It is a 60-1 bet builder. Mm. I think Fulham to score over 1.5 goals looks good. I want to cash in on United's sort of defensive fragility at the minute. Fulham have scored two or more goals in all of their last seven away games. And those include matches at Anfield and St James's Park, by the way. So you'd be pretty confident they can do that. Rodrigo Muniz looks back in form. Lovely chip over Jose Sa to score in midweek. He's got four in his last five and has scored three goals in the FA Cup this season. And in terms of the cards markets, we saw two Fulham players and Marco Silva get sent off when these two met in the Cup a couple of seasons ago. Yeah. So it could be spicy again. Mazraoui makes by far and away more tackles than any other Manchester United player. Doesn't always equal cards, but he got booked midweek against Ipswich. And at some point, he might get the Adama Traore assignments, which is always going to be difficult. And as for Sasa Lukic, I mean, he's one of the best card bets in the league. He chalked up his 10th Premier League card in midweek, one of only two players to have reached that milestone already. He's going to be banned for his next two Premier League games, so he'll surely start. He's committed nigh on 50 fouls in the league this season. Mm. So I think Lukic and Mazraoui to be booked, Fulham to score two or more, Muniz to score, 60-1 bet builder that becomes bigger with the boost. That's kind of the live the dream bet for me this weekend.
Yeah, that's something else, yeah, because the prices are kind of fascinating around FA Cup weekends, aren't they, Sam? Because you just don't know what kind of team is going to go on the pitch and the commitment levels required too. I myself have gone for a Fulham win with both teams to score, but I'd say the prices on all three outcomes here, are going to penalties would be quite close, I'd imagine. Okay, overall though, I'd say -3 for Manchester City is the way to go. Shane, any objections there? We lock it in?
I think lock it in. I like the way Sam's thinking as well, and maybe both of those bets could come up. If you had a 5-1 City win, for example, the City minus 3 and the City to win, Plymouth to score, would both come in. So, you know, we could both be right, in fairness. But yeah, I just love to see that fairy tale Plymouth goal, and if it happens early, then it's the hope that'll kill you if you're a Plymouth Argyle fan, because I do think City will win this game, but I would like to see that little moment for Plymouth Argyle this weekend as well.
He's a cup player, but he's a future star. Sam Norris from William Hill, thanks a million. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
All the best. We might stay with that Manchester United game now, actually. We might go to that next in the graphic. So it's at Old Trafford. It's against Fulham. It's 4:30 on Sunday. Let's see what we got here for Manchester United against Fulham. Whoa! There's a lot going on that screen. So Cullum has Fulham 1-2. Let's see who else is in the room here. Kathleen, draw United after extra time. You're going 3-2, is that right? After extra time, Kathleen? 2-2 full time. And then Shane, interesting, exactly the same, but a different scoreline, 2-1 for Manchester United. So you're envisioning both, start with yourself, Kathleen, or Fulham scoring first here?
Yes.
Or Manchester United coming back? So an Everton repeat from last weekend?
Yes, that's what
you love that bit.
I feel like it's the sort of one, Fulham will go ahead, United will pull one back, it'll be scrappy for most of the second half. I'm kind of imagining like a flurry of action in the last 10-15 minutes, and then it'll go to extra time and United will just scrape themselves through. Fernandes will pop up and do something. I don't know. This was the fixture of the week that I'm kind of putting my what I want to happen and the entertainment I want to get from the game. I actually think it probably won't be that fun.
Yeah, well, I don't think it'll be that fun for any Manchester United fans watching, because the game during the week against Ipswich at Old Trafford was, once again, just one of those games where you're like, everything that can go wrong is going to go wrong. Patrick Dorgu's mistake for the goal. Well, you could call it Onana's mistake for the goal either. And then Dorgu's red card, of course, just before half-time. They showed a bit of character, United, but like the fact that they're relying on centre-halves to score goals in big games. Bruno Fernandes is obviously involved in a lot of these moments as well. But just they're not getting any delivery or service at all to Rasmus Højlund. You know, United are holders of this competition. It's going to be tough for them to defend that title the way they're playing football at the moment. The Europa League probably has to take precedence, you'd imagine. Fulham are a team coming to Old Trafford very much on the back of, you know, that win against Wolves during the week, a bit of confidence coming in. They've never won the FA Cup. They lost to West Ham in their only ever final appearance in 1975. So they're a team that will have that certainly at the forefront of their minds. I'm sure it'll form part of the team's team talk this weekend. This is a team that have never won it. So,
yeah.
Look, I'm expecting a reasonable game at Old Trafford. You expect goals at Old Trafford because United's defence is so frail. I've gone United to win in extra time, but look, if the game goes to extra time, it could go either way. You can see how split we all are in that graphic there, but I'm expecting another taunting weekend for United supporters.
Erik ten Hag won this trophy last year. 9 months later, he's working for his brother's company. No wonder the magic of the cup is gone. It's not even in sport.
What does his brother do? What is the company?
It's the Ten Hag's business. Don't be asking those questions.
Very good.
I love when Cullum doesn't know the answer to something. Yeah. He just deflects.
I never said I don't know. You gotta have an air of mystery about you. You know, you can't give them everything that they want. You can't give them all of it. Manchester United have actually reached the last two FA Cup finals, of course. It's been the same game twice, the Manchester Derby. It's funny, like, something about like the cup that brings a bit of freedom to one's stresses in the Premier League.
Well, the fact that, you know, they're constantly reminded, oh, you're 15th in the league, you're actually in a relegation, when you're not really in a relegation battle, because they're
thank God for the bottom three and the promoted three.
Basically. But now you have an FA Cup game, and the same will go for the Europa League. They can forget about that on Sunday afternoon, isn't it? This game is on. So forget about the league. Go for it. Play with a little bit of freedom, and you'd like to see some of those younger players as well, whether it's Chido Obi-Martin or Aidan Heaven, who's come in from Arsenal as well, getting maybe some game time because of the FA Cup, because the season is essentially a damp squib for United. But look, all of a sudden, if you get through Fulham, you're into an FA Cup quarter final.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're only, what, 3 wins away from another FA Cup.
I have a question for you in that, what is the significance for Manchester United if they do retain the FA Cup this season, because it didn't do Erik ten Hag much good?
No, but I think the writing was on the wall already for ten Hag, and it was coming to an end, whereas this will be a trophy for Ruben Amorim at the start of his tenure.
I think Arteta for Arsenal?
Yeah. Maybe not the best example of how Amorim wants the United career to go, but well, essentially being involved in title races would obviously be a step up for this United team at the moment. But I just think it would be maybe something to bring the team together, to win another trophy. You saw they were on a bonding team night out there a couple of weeks ago, and winning a trophy helps a team bond as well at the end of a season. It gives them that extra impetus at the start of the next season, but it's hard to see it happening.
I saw that they went bonding, was it like a week and a half ago, and I was watching the first 70 minutes of the Everton game at Goodison Park Saturday lunchtime, and I couldn't figure out, had they bonded too well or is there no chemistry at all, because they were appalling. Now things are looking slightly up, Kathleen, for Manchester United, because I was noting there during the week, or last week before the Everton game, was that only the bottom three and Everton themselves have scored fewer goals than Manchester United in the Premier League this season. There's only 10 games to go. Like, it's a remarkable statistic. They can now add West Ham beneath them because of the three goals that United scored against Ipswich last time out. But and another weird stat is, with all this negativity around United, Kathleen, they've won 7 of their last 11 games.
Isn't United that mental? Have.
Yeah, in all competitions, including the FA Cup and the Europa League. But you look at the opposition that they've beaten, and other than Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium, which is still a disgrace on your behalf, is not really that impressive on paper, is it?
It's kind of the opposition of their level at this stage.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they still managed to lose comfortably at home to, say, the likes of a Crystal Palace, very good team, but they would be beaten by a team like that who have any bit of functionality and cohesion in their team at all. Like I said to you, it didn't do Eric Ten Hag much good winning the FA Cup. They kind of had to give him a new contract on the back of beating Manchester City at Wembley, and this was a much better Man City side, but it was just a stay of execution.
They definitely could have played that whole thing better, though. They could have gone to Ten Hag and said, look, this ain't working for us. It's not working for you either. Why don't you say, I've really enjoyed my time here, but, you know, I've hit a peak, I've hit a pinnacle, I've just won a cup, and I'm going to step aside and give him some money, pay him off, get rid of him. That would have made more sense.
Like, his reputation would have been so much more intact.
Yeah, obviously if you'd fired him, it would have looked a bit weird, but there was definitely like a bit of massaging of the truth that could have gone on. And that meant they would have been able to get rid of him after that game.
I agree with you. And I think the problem is that they kind of mumbled what you just summarised there, which was like, we're kind of going to have a look at someone else to see if we can bring in someone else. Mm. Oh, no, we can't. We'll give you a new contract, so instead. But sure, the first time they were going to go into a sign of trouble, he was always going to go, which is what transpired.
But that's the thing as well. Like, I can see that argument as well, that Ten Hag, his reputation would have been very much intact. But then he, of course, knows, I'm going to get a new contract. And then if they sack me in a few months, and he got what a payout of 11, 12, 13 million, I think. So, you know, there's a reputational thing, and then there's the money, obviously. And you couldn't really fault Ten Hag for just sticking with it. And even if he did not believe that he could turn things around at Old Trafford, he knew that signing a new contract was going to be lucrative for him, and probably felt like he could walk into another job. Mm. Hasn't quite happened just yet, but I think after you leave Old Trafford and the stress of that job at the minute, you need a bit of time out afterwards.
I've gone for a Fulham victory here in normal time as well. Okay. It'll be close on paper, but I think Fulham will be the superior side. I know that Fulham are one of the very few opposition that Manchester United have beaten under Ruben Amorim so far. That was at Craven Cottage on Monday Night Football in the Premier League, but Fulham have also won at Old Trafford recently, and I don't think they're a better team. I think most teams are better than Manchester United, so I have been going for United in a lot of these games, that I think they're going to overperform all of a sudden. But with this, I just think they beat Ipswich during the week, and then you lulled into the false sense of security that it starts from here, lads. From this moment on, will be good. And that's where a Marco Silva side, who'll be very well coached, will come in and take advantage of that intense vulnerability that they have.
Yeah. Like, Fulham are quite a nice team to watch, and there's something about Fulham coming to Old Trafford as well that you feel like this. It's not a banana skin because it's an all Premier League tie. You wouldn't be surprised at all to see Fulham win this. But you look at the stats when United play Fulham; they've progressed from their last 9 FA Cup ties against Fulham. And even in my own memory of as a child, when United played Fulham in the FA Cup, United won. Now things are different now, of course, but there's just something in the, and even in the Premier League this season, they've beaten them 1-0 in both games this season, United. I think it'll be a tight game, but United will you know, they know they have the better of Fulham so far this season, for example.
Yeah, like I was even saying to Sam Norris there, it's so difficult to know what's going to transpire in an FA Cup weekend when it comes to Premier League teams, because if you look at Fulham in the league, they're 9th, so Europe is very much a live possibility, and Marco Silva will certainly be one to be the man at the helm who provided that for Fulham. And so maybe the FA Cup isn't a massive priority. Like you said, though, they never won it before. Mm. So it's just really hard to know what kind of team United play, but it's kind of irrelevant at the moment. Which 11 go out on the pitch? They're just kind of meandering towards the final whistling games. Ruben Amorim was saying that like we're just so passive and reactive in the aftermath of the Everton game, particularly in the first half, that United just let games go by them. Look, before we move on to the Newcastle match, just one question on Ruben Amorim, and it's a slightly big one, Shane, is there's no chance he leaves, is there, by the summer? There's no chance that like this is a Felix Jones England type scenario where this ain't working out
and he goes back to Sporting. If results continue really badly, obviously you'd have to, the board would have to act, but I can't see it. Look, Amorim is going to get, he's going to get the summer transfer window. You'd imagine he'll get to Christmas at least.
Okay.
Look, that is obviously that. There's an asterisk on that.
He needs a proper transfer window.
He does, of course.
You can't. Like,
I don't know what proper transfer window is going to be there with the money available, which might not be that much.
Yeah, but surely they have to find something somewhere, or else get some people off the books, because like the situation as it is, if Ratcliffe and the rest are going to actually take this takeover seriously, you know, I don't know how you guys feel about it as United fans, but very much the mood music seems to be over the last couple of months that as much as the Glazers took out of United and got them to this position, it doesn't feel like United fans are particularly excited about Ratcliffe or anything that he has done. And if anything, he just seems to be hollowing out a bit of the core even more than the Glazers. Like, as bad as they were, you know, they still fed people. They didn't get rid of, you know, lifelong staff or replace their lunches with free fruit or, you know, it just...
Well, the Glazers are genius in that they're there in the background and they've washed their hands of all of the footballing side of things, so they're laughing all the way to the bank. But Ratcliffe the little things he's doing, and when you're talking about literally, you know, sending back sellotape and counting up stationery in the offices around Old Trafford, literally... Like that's sucking the soul out of a football club. You're sacking people who've been there for years and years and years. People in, you know, who work in the cafeterias. The lunches have been cut for staff as well. I'm even seeing someone like Wayne Barton, who we've had on the show before, who's an author and has written about United. He was a member of the United staff and has been culled as well.
He was doing really interesting work about the history of the club and
fascinating stuff.
Information that had never been brought to light before.
The date the club was founded on, was one thing that Wayne Barton had found in his research. So there are people losing jobs who are vital people behind the scenes, and also people who are just the spine of the football club as well.
Does United still have an allure for players?
Well, I think it does, because
like if you're a top range striker, or I don't know, like any, you could actually pick any position on the pitch for United at the moment, pretty much. But if you're a player and Amorim comes to you this summer and says, like, look, this is the project, this is what I want to build, I think you'll be really integral to it.
Yeah,
do you go?
You're not, because Amorim can't convince any player coming in that they're going to be involved in a Premier League title race in the next 2 or 3 years, because they're not going to be. But he can convince them, look, this is still one of the biggest clubs in the world. There'll be high wages as well for players coming in. The fan base is still there massively across the world. You know, if this is a massive if they were to win the Europa League this year, you know, they would have Champions League football for next season. That would be a massive draw for people as well. So look, it is a far tougher sell than the sell that Alex Ferguson had all those years ago, but I still think the allure of Old Trafford is a draw for a lot of players around the world.
If it stays standing,
well, if Old Trafford stays standing, the league stop.
What's the allure of Manchester United for players, but who are the assets for Manchester United to sell?
As in, which players would we get rid of? Well, you obviously get, like, Rashford and Anthony off the wage books for now, at least, is a start.
Who'd you get money off?
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
So, Kobbie Mainoo, you don't want to get rid of Kobbie Mainoo, do you?
No. The players you're going to get money for are the players you actually want to keep.
Yeah.
Like Kobbie Mainoo, like Bruno Fernandes.
Alejandro Garnacho.
Yeah. Garnacho's attitude the other night, he's taken off, obviously, at halftime with the Dorgu red card, goes down the tunnel and does not reappear for the second half. That is ridiculous carry on, and it's so akin to what Cristiano Ronaldo did in the attitude he had when he returned to the club. Garnacho obviously fed off that and looked up to Cristiano Ronaldo in many ways, but he needs to cut that sort of crap out and post it on Instagram straight after the match of himself looking dejected, a real mysterious post. He puts up another one a little while later. Obviously, someone's in his ear saying, you know, you're going to have to mention something about the team. And then he ultimately does. But, you know, Garnacho's going to have to. I think Amorim has said he's having chats with him this week about his attitude. You can't just go down the tunnel as a young player and not appear for the second half. The substitution, albeit he could have made hay in the second half, taking on those Ipswich defenders, but it was the right move to make at the time, given Dorgu had been sent off.
It's hip to have an attitude until you can't play.
That's it.
At the moment, Garnacho isn't doing it on the pitch. Like, his price tag is going down fast, lads. Like, what would you take for Garnacho? About 25, 30 million? Not just the Everton moment, you know, that amazing goal, one of the best in Premier League history, but do you remember him against Fulham, actually, at Craven Cottage when he ran the pitch?
Well, no, he's a 40 to 50 million player in the modern market.
Okay.
And I'm not saying he's a 40 to 50 million player 10, 15 years ago, but in the modern market, when you look at even the figures United are spending on other players you've never heard of, he's probably, Chelsea probably would have paid, I would imagine, at least 40 million for him. And that's 40 million based on potential, because he hasn't reached it yet.
There is a thing with the attitude situation as well, where it's very easy for a player, if the right coach comes to them and say, like, look, everyone's annoyed at United at the moment. This is, you know, like, there was all the stuff about Rashford and how his attitude was bad, and now he's gone off and he seems happy as Larry. Yeah. And, you know,
Anthony's flying it at Real Betis. Just got his red card rescinded as well.
So yeah, he's happy days.
It's just more to the point of, like, there are plenty of Garnacho-like players out there. Mm. You know, other wingers are available. And I just don't know how special he is. And Kobbie Mainoo, for sure. But if you sell him, Bruno Fernandes eventually leaves. What do you have left in that midfield?
And yet he's been a bright spark, Garnacho, in a very dull season for United. Like, in a couple of games, he's been the only attacking outlet. I'm trying to think, was it the Southampton game maybe where they came back from behind? There was a couple of games anyway.
I think Ahmad's been the bright star, but he's gone
of
now.
Course, yeah. Ahmad was the main one. But Garnacho, it's just the attitude thing, and it's the little thing that has seen the likes of Sancho and Rashford fall by the wayside. Don't want it to happen to Garnacho as well, but he's heading down that path.
Well, you're having him. Bruno Fernandes, finally, on Manchester United here. Has he wasted his career?
By being at United?
His peak years at the club, that's really struggling. He has a trophy. How many trophies is it? He signed in January 2020, so that's an FA Cup and a couple of losing finals.
Has he wasted his career? Like,
obviously, he's made great money. He's an important player. He has a great life. I'm just talking about what he could have possibly done. Yeah. Is he actually at his level where he's like the man?
Well, the alternative for him, say, this is not a disrespect to Arsenal, for example, but say
it definitely is going to be. Yeah. No offence, but
but say he leaves Portugal and signs for Arsenal or Tottenham, or Chelsea, in 2020, and he does exactly what he's doing and wins the same amount of trophies. Like, has he wasted his career then also? Like, he will look back and say, you know, if he can help United out of these doldrums in the next 3 or 4 years and win a couple of more trophies and get them back to a situation where they're at least competing for European places and for top four, as a low bar limit, then he'll go down as probably United's best player of this era, of this, you know, 7-8 year period, a captain of the club as well. So I don't think he's wasted his career. I just don't see the alternative career he could have had at other similar.
I imagine Catholic people get very defensive about that question from a Manchester United perspective. How dare you? He's not wasted his career. He's the main man. He's the captain. He's the only positive thing about it. How has he wasted it? But do you get where I'm getting at with that question?
No, I get what you're saying. I would argue that if he had joined Arsenal, at least it would have been competing for Premier League titles.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And he would also have an FA Cup title as well.
He still does.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. I was like, if that's the only thing that he's kind of got. I don't know. It's hard. Like, has his talent been wasted? Potentially, yes, I think. But also, I don't know if he would... he's never really felt like the sort of person who's looked at the squad and looked at the struggles that they've gone through and is thinking to himself, I want an out. You know, I've never got that sense from him. He's been very committed to United, very committed to the cause. So I get the sense from his perspective that having the honour of captaining United, no matter what state they're in, is still something that he classifies as important for his career. There's also an argument that... would a lot of teams look at him and look at the level that United have been playing in and think, well, he looks good because everyone else looks bad. Well, that's but how good is he actually? And I know you get to see him whenever he plays with the international
side, isn't it? It's Portugal is kind of the example where he fits in. Anyway, would you both fancy a virtual trip to St James's Park?
Oh, let's go, please.
Let's go to Newcastle United versus Brighton and Hove Albion in the FA Cup fifth round. It's our last FA Cup tie of this discussion. And an interesting sandwich there in terms of Newcastle on the top and bottom here in this graphic and Brighton all in the middle. So again, for the radio listeners' perspective here, I've gone for Newcastle in a 3-0 victory. Shane has also gone for Newcastle 3-1, and Will, top of the league, has gone 2-1. The rest have gone for Brighton, including Kathleen McNamee at 1-2 for Fabian Hertzler's men.
The biggest result there of anyone.
Yeah.
Why?
I just don't trust Hertzler and Brighton. And I trust Newcastle more.
Even without Isak.
Yeah. Now, Isak has tainted it for sure. But I can still see them score three goals. Absolutely. I can see Callum Wilson stepping up. I can see Anthony Gordon scoring. Jacob Murphy's been flying out recently. They have goals from midfield. They have goals from defence on set pieces. I have a lot of time for what Eddie Howe has done with Newcastle this season, because I think a lot of people write him off. I think he's the type of manager to be written off, because he's a soft face. He's a nice voice. And people think, oh, he's not really ruthless enough to make it. But if you listen to Keith Tracy on with us, he's very much ruthless. When Keith played under Eddie Howe, he will cut you if he doesn't like you. And I think they've done some great stuff. They've had a little bit of inconsistency recently, some strange results, like at home to Bournemouth. But
the Forest second half as well was
and they're not happy with, and look, and how, say, you know, Eddie says, how did that happen afterwards? Because they're 4-1 up, they're flying it, and they let Forest back into the team, into this game. But Forest then go on to draw with your beloved Kathleen, so obviously a very good team. So it's good to get 3 points against them. And I firmly believe they're going to use the home crowd to their advantage. They're going to continue on the goal scoring route that they started last weekend. And I don't think Brighton will, for want of a better term, show up in this massively long journey that they have to make physically. Tell me, Kathleen, why that won't happen.
It's the inconsistency that Newcastle have shown over the last couple of weeks. I do think this has the potential to be a high-scoring game for both sides, even though that hasn't exactly what I've gone for. But I think Newcastle have just been leaking too many poor goals for me to see this as a straight-out 3-0 win for them. I think missing Isak is massive for them, even just from, I totally agree with all the players that you listed off there. They have the potential to get goals, and I do think this is a game that they will score in, but I just think missing him, he's been so essential to some of their better wins this season. It's going to be a bit more of a struggle for them, and I've just liked watching Brighton play a lot this year. Newcastle are one of those funny teams in that they really annoy me sometimes at how good they are. And then the next week, they can just almost shut it off completely and they look like a disjointed side. So, to be honest, this one was a bit of a coin flip for me.
Yeah, it is a tough one, definitely. Again, like, it's all about who plays, what sides go out and how they approach it. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I've gone 3-1 Newcastle in this one.
Same rationale?
Similar rationale, home advantage, cup game. Newcastle will have cup fever because they've got the EFL Cup final.
But that's the thing, isn't it? The Carabao Cup final against Liverpool, I firmly suspect Liverpool will win that comfortably, to be honest with you.
Right, okay.
I don't think Newcastle will land much of a punch on Arne Slot's face.
When there's a trophy on the line, it's hard to see.
Sure, you know, famously, they haven't won since the Fairs Cup in 1969 when the Beatles were still together.
Yeah, and they landed on the moon that year as well. A lot
the Beatles
happened.
Did. Jesus, the Beatles did. That's a hell of a decade.
Yeah. John Lennon was the first man on the moon. He wasn't, fact checker. I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm trying to rationalise my 3-1 Newcastle is what I'm trying to do, but they defeat to Liverpool during the week, the 2-0, like, I don't know, glimpses from Newcastle in that game. Like, it's probably on a par with what you'd expect in a game against Liverpool at the moment. But Newcastle often have good cup runs, so their last 9 FA Cup fifth round ties they've progressed from, so they tend to win these games as well. Like, you look at Brighton, Brighton's run in this cup, so a nice win over Norwich 4-0, and then the impressive 2-1 win over Chelsea when they played each other twice in a few days in the league and cup. But there's just something about Newcastle and the cup. Maybe I'm it's recency bias coming in because of their Carabao Cup run, but I think they'd be a threat they'll be a threat in the FA Cup, and if they get over Brighton, you're into a quarter final and no one really wants to play them.
I agree with you. I think they're a momentum side. They use success to their advantage, so they don't mind the schedule so much. I would hold that against Brighton from what I've seen of Fabian Hertzler's side. Like, they had that 7-0 demolition at the hands of Nottingham Forest at the City Ground. They've reacted really well to that.
But that's
1-4.
What I think. I think they have. That was like a massive wake up call for them, and since then they've been a lot better.
The most recent was a 2-1 victory at home to our everyone's probably favourite second team this season, Bournemouth.
Oh yeah,
at home, which was a great result. So it'll be tight, but I'm very confident of Eddie Howe's men that are going to comfortably win this game. So we're wrapped up there with the men's FA Cup, and just to finish up this week's episode of Who You Got with William Hill, we're going to go to the WSL. We have Arsenal entertaining West Ham United. Let's look at the table there. Wow, unanimous, all in on the Gooners. So I've gone 4-0. Kathleen there has gone 3 and Shane has gone 4. Other notable predictions: Owen thinks that West Ham will score 3-1 to Arsenal, same with Nathan, and I believe that is it. Everyone else has Arsenal nilling West Ham. It's hard to argue against that, Kathleen, is it?
Yeah, I think so. They had that massive North London derby win against Spurs right before the international break, 5-0 win for them there. West Ham, they're such a inconsistent side. You know, it's the sort of game where they could come out, they could turn up. But I think Arsenal, since Rene Sleggers have come in, have really found their groove. You know, you have players like Alessia Russo looking like the player that we've always expected her to be.
Second top scorer, isn't she?
Yeah. And I think she has got a bit of inspiration in this Arsenal side that they've been severely lacking over the last couple of years under Adevel. West Ham are very much at the stage of, you know, manager coming in, still trying to work out the style of play, hasn't had a proper transfer window yet to maybe make the team into what she wants them to be. So I think there should be a comfortable win for Arsenal, and if it's not, it would be raising a lot of questions in my mind as to what does this team actually need to do to compete with the likes of Chelsea, because, you know, you look at the squad that they have, okay, it's nowhere near the superstardom of that Chelsea squad, but, you know, they have some of the best English players in that team. You have the likes of Kaden McCabe, you have Mariona Caldante, who plays with the Spanish women's side and has been potentially, I think, one of the best signings in the league in recent memory. Mm-hmm. So if they can't make it click, what is the issue? Like, where is it all falling apart? Because I don't think it's style of play. I don't think it's personnel. I don't think it's the manager. They're just, it's kind of similar to the men's team. There just seems to be some sort of mental block there. And I don't know, is someone spraying some sort of gas into the air around Arsenal that's kind of making them, that's making them not able to get past that? Because it's been a consistent issue over the years. It's not a new one either.
Yeah. There's actually a lot online in this game. So it's Arsenal in third against West Ham in eighth. If West Ham pull off an upset here, they could go as high as sixth in the league. So they have a superior goal difference to the two ahead of them in Liverpool and Spurs. By the way, did you hear this about Spurs? They released a statement. They want to be called either Tottenham Hotspur or Spurs, but they no longer want to be called Tottenham.
The
football club in general, yeah, they released that.
Do you want to say that again? They want to be called?
I will, I have no problem saying that again. They released a statement saying that don't call us Tottenham anymore. Call us either Tottenham Hotspur, their full name, or our nickname Spurs.
Okay.
Did they give any sort of rationale for this?
I suppose Tottenham is the geographical area.
I guess they want to, they're like, you know, it's like a kid starting college and they want to have a new identity and want to be called by their nickname.
It'd be like calling Aston Villa Aston, in fairness.
Well, it always troubled me that you could go with both. And I don't think you should do that as a football club.
But you wouldn't call them Hotspurs.
No, true. True.
Except when Harry Redknapp one time did a video and he was like, Harry Redknapp, manager of Tottenham Hotspurs. And it moves on. And also, if Arsenal win, they'll actually go second because they have a superior goal difference to Manchester United, who are the probably informed team in the WSL at the moment. They're 5-5. Shane, can I ask you about Kenny McCabe from during the week here? We've reflected on it a lot in Ireland's performance, and there's not an awful lot more to say about it other than, you know, Carlo Ward's attempt. That I heard yourself, Kathleen, and Karen Doggan talk about it on the Koi Gig pod this week. I thought Karen put it pretty succinctly, is that it felt like Carlo Ward said, look, I'll put the three best ball playing midfielders we have together and off with ye. And now McCabe is returning to quality teammates back to left back. Do you think that this is going to be a nice old mental reprieve from her from the pressure of captaining Ireland?
Probably.
Or is there a bit of hurt remaining, I suppose, for Wales?
I would imagine so. Like, Katie McCabe doesn't seem like the type who sees international football as a burden in any stretch. Obviously, coming off the back of not a poor international window. They got the win against Turkey, albeit it wasn't too impressive. But the Slovenia result will leave a sour taste, and it's probably the worst result we've had in quite some time.
2008 was the last time we lost by that much.
Yeah, and Katie McCabe will feel that more so than anyone else. Do you know, and the fact that she was moved position as well. Carla Ward is trying new things. We even said on the show this morning, I think it's a good time for a result like that to have happened very early in someone's...
Yeah, Scarlett Herriman saying that.
Only had a certain number of training sessions and time with these players. So you would imagine and hope that the things will come together. Carla Ward comes in with a brilliant CV and probably one of the names that people didn't see coming for the Ireland position, but still one of the most impressive CVs you'll see in terms of someone who we could have got with the budget.
I am curious as to how McCabe feels. She said before the Turkey game, when she was doing media with Carla Ward, that the Welsh, like the failure to win against the Welsh, was the lowest point of her Ireland career. Yep. And I wonder, has Slovenia overtaken that? Because it's like the double whammy of, you know, not qualifying.
Yeah.
Now we're chasing Slovenia to just get out of League B, which is absolutely mental thing that we didn't think we were going to be in that position of. And to go back into an Arsenal squad who don't really have anything to play for this season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just Champions League, yes, but I don't see them winning the Champions League. Yeah. I think everyone's pretty certain it's probably going to be Chelsea or Lyon that do it this year, maybe Barcelona.
Yeah.
You know, mentally, where do you go with that?
Absolutely. Like, I think for a lot of players, they would enjoy the pressure of being released, of going back to your club and not having anywhere near as much pressure to be the one who delivers and going back to a more natural position. She doesn't have to wear the armband. She doesn't have to shout her teammates out of it. However, I think that suits Katie McCabe.
Yeah.
And I don't think a diminishing responsibility list would actually aid her in getting over what has happened. And it feels to me, look, we don't know what goes on in someone's head. It's just on the outside looking in, it's like she cannot wait for that Greece doubleheader in April because Arsenal would take care of itself kind of thing.
Oh, I'd say if you told all the players on the pitch you can go out tomorrow and play again, they'd be like, yes, please.
Yeah, get it over and done with, yeah.
Like, their only option now is to absolutely hammer Greece. Hope that helps with the goal difference and that Slovenia get tripped up by Turkey, or that we, because realistically we're not going to score 4 goals against them when they come to Tala. That's not going to happen.
All right, well, that's it for who you got. Just a roundup there of the FA Cup fifth round fixtures this weekend. Tonight, of course, Aston Villa against Cardiff City, and tomorrow we have Crystal Palace, Millwall, Preston versus Burnley. We got Bournemouth, Wolves, Manchester City, Plymouth, Argyle, of course, Newcastle, Brighton, Manchester United, Fulham, and the FA Cup action is rounded up on Monday night with Nottingham Forest against Ipswich Town, another all Premier League affair. Who you got? You're asking me?
Yes.
I had a very enjoyable show. That's what I got with Shane Hannon and Kathleen McNamee. Any last words?
Have a great weekend, Colin. It's been a pleasure as always.
Can you differentiate the sentiment?
I hope you have a brilliant time.
Goodbye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.